Marketplace is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
Amid the backyard parties and the fire on the grill, today Americans pause to remember the nation's war dead. They also turn to celebrate the start of summer. So today we'll hear about that car you may take on a road trip and all the movies that'll make you wonder, haven't we been here before? From American Public Media, this is Marketplace.
Make it a working lunch. Listen to the Marketplace Midday Update podcast for the day's top business headlines. Subscribe on iTunes or at marketplace.org/podcasts.
From the Frank Stanton Studios in Los Angeles, I'm Tess Vigeland in for Kai Rizdahl. Thanks for joining us on this Monday. It is the 30th day of May. Hope you're enjoying the holiday weekend. Demonstrations continued in Greece today against proposed austerity measures. Last night, tens of thousands of protesters marched on central Athens to oppose demands by the International Monetary Fund for more belt tightening. The protests come at a highly sensitive time. Officials from the EU and the IMF are in Athens, assessing whether Greece should receive the next installment of its bailout loans. Last year, the Greeks were promised more than $150 billion worth, but only in exchange for tough measures to cut the budget deficit. Marketplace's Stephen Beard has more from London.
Greece is supposed to get its latest cash transfusion by the end of June, some $17 billion. But before they lend the money, the EU and the IMF must satisfy themselves the country's got its finances in order. It hasn't, says Der Spiegel. The German magazine claims that Greece still hasn't done enough to cut its deficit and so could be denied the bailout cash. That would be a disaster, says Dragana Ignatovich of IHS Global Insight.
Any indication that the international community will withhold money from Greece could have a very negative impact on the stability of the Greek economy as well as the wider eurozone.
She says it could trigger a tidal wave of speculation that could sink the euro. Martina Stevis of the Eleftherotypia newspaper in Athens says Greece will probably get the bailout money, but it will be told to speed up its deficit reduction. That means raising taxes and cutting public spending. After 5 days of anti-austerity protests, she says that won't go down well with the public.
People are disillusioned. They've lost all hope. And I feel that there is not much appetite for any other sacrifices on a personal and collective level.
Many analysts believe the only way out is for Greece to restructure its debt, for example, to negotiate later repayment. But a senior member of the European Central Bank dismissed that out of hand today. He said the financial markets would go crazy. In London, I'm Stephen Beard for Marketplace.
Now to our own domestic budget battles. There is no legislative business today on Capitol Hill, of course, but as soon as lawmakers get back to work, they will return to a familiar topic in the news, the U.S. budget deficit. Republican leaders are insisting that their proposal to transform Medicare into a voucher system is still on the table in budget negotiations. Democrats are insisting the Republican proposal would, quote, end Medicare as we know it. Is any kind of reform for Medicare or Social Security possible in this political environment? We asked Marketplace's Nancy Marshall Genzer to take a look.
Entitlement programs like Medicare, Medicaid, and Social Security are the biggest and fastest growing parts of the federal budget, so it would be pretty hard to make a serious dent in the deficit without tackling them. The question is how, especially after last week's House election in New York.
This election may have killed any real chance at entitlement reform.
Larry Sabato teaches political science at the University of Virginia. He says both parties have reasons now to steer clear of major changes. Republicans don't want to be accused of weakening Medicare. Democrats and their supporters have made opposition to the Medicare voucher plan a major part of their strategy for the 2012 elections. Roger Hickey is co-director of the liberal group Campaign for America's Future. He's telling Democrats the takeaway from the election is don't tamper with entitlements.
Has sent a message that if you get on the side of the American people on Medicare and on Social Security, you can win just about anywhere in the country.
And last week's election in New York showed voters lean toward leaving Medicare alone. Medicare advocates have another less public message for Democrats. If you trim entitlements, we'll go after you in the primaries, throwing our support behind a candidate who promises not to touch them. Teddy Downey is a senior policy analyst at MF Global. He says with that kind of pressure, Congress won't get serious about entitlements until after 2012.
The outcome of the 2012 election is the most important event deciding what entitlement reform will really look like.
Until then, Downey says, budget negotiators will just nibble at the edges, making incremental changes, like slowing payments to doctors or making recipients pay just a teensy bit more. In Washington, I'm Nancy Marshall-Genzer for Marketplace.
Wall Street took the day off for hot dogs and beer. We'll have details from the rest of the world when we do the numbers. Memorial Day holiday here and a public holiday in the UK meant a light trading day for oil. But the price of black gold has been rising steadily the last few months, and consumers aren't the only ones feeling the pain. For each jump of $10 a barrel, the Pentagon ends up spending $1 billion more for fuel. The Air Force uses the most oil, but it is aggressively developing alternative energy solutions. And now the Air Force is building support for biofuel by filling the tanks of its most elite planes with it. From the Marketplace Sustainability Desk, Eve Troh reports.
That's the Thunderbirds, the elite demonstration squad of the U.S. Air Force. Their precise formations and dives now brought to you by Camelina. It's a flax-like plant behind a new biofuel for jets. Air Force Lieutenant General Norm Sipe says the biofuel has no performance or safety issues.
When you see the Thunderbirds pulling 9Gs and going straight up and straight down, that ought to tell folks out there that this 50-50 blend works.
General Sipe has been retired about a year. Now he's an energy consultant for the Pentagon. He says the Air Force developed biofuel faster than the market because lives are on the line. Service members delivering fuel in combat zones are vulnerable to attack.
When I had to write a letter to a family that they lost a son or daughter or a husband or wife who was on one of those fuel convoys, that brings it home very succinctly.
Sipe says military research has driven down the price, but the bioblend still costs 10 times more than regular fuel. The Air Force can't charge taxpayers that much, so its orders are limited. Graham Warwick covers technology at Aviation Week.
We're at that point where everybody's sort of waiting for the private sector to step up.
He says it's a critical time for Camelina jet fuel. The tech is ready, but the demand isn't there. He says a major company needs to order a 15 or 20-year supply.
The airlines can do that because they're private entities, but they're reluctant to take that step.
And they don't have to. Unlike the military, there's no mandate for airlines to use less oil. Plus, they're so squeezed by current fuel costs, they say they can't afford extra for biofuel. I'm Eve Troh for Marketplace.
A few weeks ago, our personal finance show, Marketplace Money, devoted an entire hour to all the ways we spend money on our cars. So on this holiday weekend, with some 35 million people traveling in their cars, according to AAA, we thought we'd bring you a highlight from that show. Many of us love our cars, but only a select few love them enough to collect them or spend an hour a week talking about them on the radio.
Now it's time for this week's CarCast with your host, Adam Carolla, and the professor, Sandy Ganz.
Adam Carolla has hosted all kinds of radio and TV shows throughout his Hollywood career. Loveline with Dr. Drew, The Man Show with Jimmy Kimmel. He turned up on Dancing with the Stars a couple of years ago. Now he hosts a hugely popular podcast, The Adam Carolla Show, and a companion call-in show called CarCast, where he takes almost as many money questions as we do.
There are things that are worth saving money for, and then there are things that are just a bust. And this happens with cars all the time. I mean, you could go down to...
Carolla is what they call a wrencher, an asphalt junkie who loves almost nothing better than working on cars. On CarCast, he and his sidekick Sandy Ganz review cars, talk about car parts and car repair, and counsel listeners through their car questions.
How you doing, Adam? How you doing, Sandy?
Good.
How's it going, guys?
So I just got into medical school for next year, and my parents said they'd contribute $5,000 towards the second car of my choice. I've got a...
We drove out to visit Corolla at his Glendale studios, just up the 5 freeway from our studios. Partly because it's illegal to do an L.A.-themed show without a celebrity.
Hi, sorry.
Hey.
I'm Adam.
Tess Vigeland, very nice
Hi,
to
Tess,
meet you.
Hi, Tess, how are you?
Hi.
And partly because he's just funny. Wherefore your interest in cars? Where did this come from?
Oh, that was like old English.
Well, public radio.
Yeah, you guys are smart over there. Except for the part where you can't figure out how to support yourself. Other than that, you're geniuses.
Touché. But all we geniuses would really have to do is auction off some of his cars as pledge drive premiums, and we'd be set. In the Corolla collection right now, 4 Lamborghinis, a Ferrari, an Aston Martin, a Jag, 4 Datsun Roadsters, and 2 of Paul Newman's old race cars, among others. Corolla says, only half-jokingly, that wrenching is one of those DNA anomalies. You either have the gene or you don't. And if you have it, then being asked a question about why we all spend so much money on cars is, well, very public radio.
Yeah, I will answer that in many tears, meaning you'll be crying. It'll be so goddamn boring by the time I'm done. Now,
please begin.
As long as we're talking finance and, you know, we'd like to help the listener along. First off, don't go out and buy a new car. You know, you've all heard, you know, you drive them off the lot, blah, blah, blah. But I'll take it to the next level, which is cars are made so well now, and they're all good for a couple hundred thousand miles. So who cares if some podiatrist put 18,000 miles on the thing?
Okay, that's one layer, and I'm not bored yet. Though we have heard this somewhere before, haven't we? So let's get to those other layers. I'm going to ask you to get slightly philosophical for me.
Okay.
Most likely the second largest purchase you're ever going to make aside from your house. Why?
Yeah.
Why? Why? What's so special about the car?
I will say it's logical. You spend quite a bit of time in your car. You have countless hours a year in this environment. So why shouldn't it be as nice an environment as you can? And then secondly, how about as safe an environment as you can? Because your highest likelihood of buying it, and when I say buying it, I don't mean making a purchase. I'm talking about the farm, is behind the wheel of a car.
Excellent practical reasons to spend as much as you can on a car. We won't get into his theories about cars as a superior investment. Well, maybe just a little.
You know, everyone's 401k is dropped through the basement, and everyone else's house is dropped through the basement, unless you live here in Southern California, in which case just drop through the subflooring, or you're on a slab. We don't have basements here, but metaphorically, you know what I'm saying. The cars have gone up. I can give you 20 cars that if you would have bought those cars a few years ago, you would have made a bunch of money.
Older, seriously expensive cars, but we take his point. Ganz, the sidekick gearhead who answers the super technical questions on CarCast, isn't even as introspective as Corolla. Simple, he says.
It makes us happy. It makes us feel good. People spend money on, it's like, you know, compulsive eaters. They like to eat. They'll eat because it makes it feel good. Driving your fancy car, spending money, and you know all the car care products, all the stuff that you end up doing, it ends up being just part of the fun of having it.
And certainly part of the reason so many, many people want to talk about it. Not just on CarCast, but on, you know, other shows about cars. And as we left him to tape his show, he had an idea about that.
You know what? We need to break up those two Tappet brothers. I mean, they're fine. But I feel like you need to pair me up with either Click or Clack and Sandy with either Clack or Click and start a hybrid show.
We'll get the law firm of Dewey, Cheatham & Howe right on that. You can hear our entire car show, which we recorded while driving up and down the 110 freeway in Los Angeles, at marketplace.org. We've also got an interactive map showing how your state compares on all sorts of driving statistics. Again, that's at marketplace.org. Coming up, would you pay real money to play at a virtual casino?
It's $5 for 600,000 chips, $39 for 75 million.
Okay, well, first let's do the numbers. U.S. markets had the day off, but traders were busy elsewhere on the planet. Worries over Greek efforts to shrink its debt load weighed heavy on European markets. The French CAC 40 index lost 0.2%, while the German DAX edged down slightly. Traders in Britain had the day off for a bank holiday. Over in Japan, the Nikkei index slumped almost 0.2%. Investors are concerned that a strong yen could hurt the country's exporters. Meantime, in China, the Shanghai Composite Index dropped 0.1%, and you're listening to Marketplace.
Get Marketplace's top headlines, podcasts, and special features delivered right to your inbox each day. Subscribe to the Midday Update newsletter at marketplace.org. Marketplace covers the world of economics. Are you ready for some Freakonomics? We're partnering with the team that writes about the hidden side of everything for a regular Marketplace Freakonomics story, podcast, and more. Just go to freakonomicsradio.com.
From the Marketplace Datebook, here's a look at events for Tuesday. The Scripps National Spelling Bee kicks off its three-day competition in National Harbor, Maryland. It's No Tobacco Day, sponsored by the World Health Organization. And in 1957, U.S. playwright Arthur Miller was found guilty of contempt of Congress for refusing to reveal the identities of writers believed to be communists. I'm Alexis Diao.
This is Marketplace from APM American Public Media. I'm Tess Vigeland in for Kai Rizdal. $137 million. That was the box office gross for the gross-out buddy comedy The Hangover Part 2 this weekend, and it helped vault Hollywood to record ticket sales for Memorial Holiday. The Hangover joined Pirates of the Caribbean as the first summer blockbusters, and apparently all these sequels spell something of a trend. Claude Brodesser-Ackner is West Coast editor for Vulture, New York Magazine's online entertainment site, and he joins us now. Welcome back to the program.
Hey, Tess. How's it going?
Very well, thank you. So 9 sequels in 12 weekends. No original material anymore, huh?
Well, it is summer.
Indeed it is. It is. So what is different about this year's summer blockbusters?
Well, every year everyone says, oh, there's so many sequels. What's unique about this summer in particular is that of these 9 sequels, exactly one of them has what we would call a movie star, capital M, capital S. That is somebody who would make a picture go all by themselves and who is relied upon and compensated ridiculously for doing so.
Let me guess, Johnny Depp.
You're correct.
Thank you very much.
Now, Rocky, The Terminator, Lethal Weapon, The Matrix, these are all movies that were incredibly prolific. All their sequels came out in the summers. And that's when we expect to see stars. And what's unusual about this summer is that we're not.
Well, and certainly to my memory, I think even more recently, Spider-Man was always the big blockbuster that came out in the summer, the sequels.
For sure.
Yeah.
Which is, of course, being rebooted. But these stars usually guaranteed you something, which is to say that they guaranteed an audience would show up and that the movie would open and play through the summer.
Mm-hmm.
And something happened, sort of magical and terrible at the same time. And for that, we can thank movies like The Matrix, where if the star was originally the brand, the next thing that happened was that the special effects became the brand.
Yeah.
So you recall Keanu Reeves sort of swimming around through time with bullets whizzing by his ears in slow motion. That bullet time effect became sort of the new bar for the studios to hit. And so now the special effects were the star of the movie, just as much as the movie star. Now, you can see we're on kind of a collision course here because CGI is phenomenally expensive, and making a sequel starring a movie star at the peak of their earning power, ridiculously expensive. So something had to give, and in the end, what seems to have given is the stars.
Well, why not just use your power as a studio to change the way stars are compensated?
In point of fact, that has begun, and we can actually thank Universal. They really got it together on a movie called Fast Five, and that was sort of the dream, which is a franchise movie released just at the start of the summer, and it, lo and behold, it has movie stars in it. And how do they do that? Something called the gross pool. With the pool, The cost of the movie, just what it costs to make the movie, not to make and market the movie and distribute it and pay everyone at Paramount a bonus and so on, just the cost of shooting the picture gets deducted from the gross. Hmm. And then this pool of gross is set aside, and these rapaciously greed-headed, I mean, highly talented actors get to participate in that gross. So the mm-hmm. studio is not essentially giving away the farm before it even makes a dime.
Well, that sounds fair all around.
Well, yeah. What's wrong with being paid in success, right?
I wouldn't mind. In the meantime, we'll be at the movies. Clabber Desser-Ackner, thanks so much.
It's my pleasure.
And we've got the list of top grossing summer movies of all time. It is at marketplace.org. When you gamble, you are just throwing money to the wind, right? Well, at least in places like, say, Las Vegas, there is a chance, the ever so slightest chance, that you will win some of it back. But what if I told you you could use real money to place bets and never win? Ever? Well, you'd say, why on earth would I do that, right? Well, here's Marketplace's Sean Cole.
It's called Double Down Casino. It's a video game application on Facebook. It makes noise.
There's a very flashy platform. It says you could play blackjack, slots, or roulette.
Slots are the most popular game.
And there are different ones. There's Wild Safari, Sunken Treasure.
I went with Sunken Treasure. It has a pirate theme. And it works just like a video slot machine in a real casino. Hit the button.
Ah. Skull and crossbones, cannon, skull and crossbones, pirate ship, spin. Ah! I won $20.
Now, initially, you can play for free. You get a complimentary pot of virtual chips. But if you run out, you have to either wait until they top you off the next day, or you can put more virtual chips on your actual credit card. It's $5 for 600,000 chips, $39 for 75 million, which may seem like an absurd mountain of chips. But since they aren't real, some players will bet 20,000 virtual chips on one spin. And you may ask yourself,
how do I cash out?
Well, that's the interesting thing. You do not cash out in our game.
Greg Enell is the founder and CEO of Double Down Interactive, and he knows the law. Again, you can't run a gambling site in the U.S., and gambling, legally, has three aspects to it. Consideration, that is, betting, chance, and prize.
And what we've done is we have removed the prize element. So any money that you win in our game, you can never redeem that for any sort of monetary value.
So it's a bit like Hotel California. I mean, you can cash out anytime you like, but you can never collect.
Yeah, yes.
Nonetheless, Double Down Casino is a Facebook hit. It launched last June and already has almost 300,000 players a day. Only 7 or 8% of them are buying chips, but Greg Enell says that's a lot in the online video game world. The company's profitable, in fact, it's hiring, and all because of what amounts to a giant one-armed bandit from which no money comes.
A lot of people are amazed by the fact that people will pay to play a casino game when they have really no opportunity to win.
I'm amazed by that fact.
Well, I think there's something to be said for the thrill of gambling.
But it isn't gambling.
But it is. What we found is whether you're playing for real money or fake money, that same tension still builds. So if, for example, I'm playing blackjack, when I'm playing the game, I feel my blood pressure go up a little bit. I sit up straight in my chair. And if I do win $1.8 million in one hand, I will fist pump and I'll be excited.
Do you think this sort of satisfies the same desire that gambling satisfies?
I do.
But, you know, somebody who really loves to gamble is not going to be happy unless they have the chance of cashing out a lot of money.
Sue Schneider runs eGamingBrokerage.com. She's been monitoring the online gambling industry since 1995. And while this kind of prizeless play is relatively new, she says it isn't exactly rare. Even some actual gaming sites offer a free play section where you can practice.
And without that factor of the money, people play differently. They're going to risk more. They're going to make decisions that they wouldn't make if they had $20 on the game.
People like Jim Pruitt in Columbus, Indiana.
Hello.
Mr. Pruitt.
How are you?
Who plays the slots on Double Down Casino every day after his night shift at an aluminum tube factory. So far, he's spent about $150 on virtual chips.
The more chips you play on a line, the more you win. So it makes you feel like you're winning more, you know.
And so that makes you feel like a high roller.
Sure, yeah.
In a way that you wouldn't be able to feel in real life.
Right.
And why not just play with the daily allotment of free chips?
They don't give you enough to sustain that high or the thrill or whatever you would call it.
So it's like a drug in a way when you describe it like that.
Oh, yeah, I guess it could be, yeah.
But it's really more like non-alcoholic beer.
That's a good analogy for it. It really is.
Thank you. You get a similar flavor, but you don't wind up all stumbly. That said, a few Double Down players, just a few, get out of hand with it, spending thousands of dollars on virtual chips. And when they do that, Greg Enel's company sends them a message.
And we essentially tell them that you are now a formal VIP, and anytime you need chips, just request them directly from our customer support group, and they will provide you chips at no cost so that you can continue to play the game.
One more spin!
I'm Sean Cole for Marketplace.
Marketplace is produced in association with the University of Southern California's Annenberg School for Communication and Journalism.
And this final note, after months of saying it fully backed its head football coach despite a tattoo parlor scandal, today Ohio State announced Jim Tressel's resignation. The NCAA is investigating possible violations by players who reportedly traded Buckeye memorabilia for cash and discounted tattoos. Last year, Tressel said he had no knowledge of what had happened, but later admitted he knew before being confronted by investigators. Tressel's resignation means he forfeits the remainder of a contract that paid him $3.5 million a year through the 2014 season. And that is Marketplace from APM, American Public Media. U.S. markets were closed for the Memorial Day holiday. Our producers include Abishai Artsy, Millie Jefferson, Megan Larson, and Fiona Ng. Tune in tomorrow to the Marketplace Morning Report for the latest in business and economic news. Coming up next time, we heard earlier about online gambling. If you are conflicted about whether it should be legal, just give it the daughter test.
How would I feel if my daughter grew up to be a professional poker player? And I think, well, that wouldn't be so bad.
Freakonomics Radio is back. I'm Tess Vigeland. Hope you can join us for that tomorrow. This is APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.